Hello and welcome to Brussels Unplugged. And dear listeners, congratulations, you've made it to the end of February, possibly the shortest but longest month in the year. And boy, have so many things happened. It's been a fiery, feisty, cold month. And we've had the AI Action Summit in Paris, the Munich Security Conference, well, in Munich, and DeepSeek that nearly rattled the entire US stock market with its underpricing of its new novel AI tools. And today, to help us unpack it a little bit in a casual fashion, we have David Timmis. David, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, David, and hello, Pietro.
Hey, Matteo. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Good to have you with us, David. David is an AI expert, and his focus is mostly on skilling skills at work. So we're going to start.
Let's get into it, yeah.
Yeah, let's go to start. So what is basic question? What does it mean? What is the job that you do in terms of indeed helping people to upskill and, you know, in practical terms?
Yes, so I wear multiple hats, but the common thread is my mission. It's preparing people for the future of work. And this mission, how I come close to fulfilling it every day in the age of AI, is, of course, preparing people for the AI realm that they're living in now. So I do prompt engineering trainings for think tankers, activists, politicians, corporate employees, and so on. I'm a career coach. And in my full-time job, I work for an NGO called Generation.org, through which we reskill and upskill vulnerable people and find them jobs. Not necessarily in Belgium, but we are present in Europe, and we're present in around 17 countries on 5 continents. So we're a global NGO focused on employment, I would say.
Fantastic. And I think that's the first thing that comes to mind, because I was just at last year at an event on AI, like many of our listeners. And one thing that was definitely missing was that core message. Why should you not be afraid? And how do you prepare for the future that's fast approaching us?
Yeah, I'm definitely more of a, if I may say, a realist optimist, meaning that I am aware of the dangers. I used to work in a big tech company. I know of the incredible opportunities AI can provide. But now I work in an NGO that prepares vulnerable people, some of which have lost their jobs because of technological disruptions, not just AI. We had automation for years now, which has taken jobs in factories, as they say, dull, dangerous jobs, but still, nevertheless, some people's jobs. So I'm seeing this in a very, I would say, neutral perspective, which I think is quite rare these days, because you either have doomers or people who are just, you know, riding the hype.
Yeah.
And to answer your question, the way I try to help for my prompt engineering trainings, my coaching, is always to kind of empower people. Because if you want to wait for your employer or your government to train you or to upskill you, you're probably going to be a bit late. Mm-hmm. And as they say, it's not AI taking your job, it's the colleague who's using the AI tool to become more productive than you. So the key message I usually have is learn to use these tools for a training with me or with other people. We have a few even in Brussels who are focusing on prompt engineering. Learn online. There's so many free resources, and you'll be better able to thrive even in this age of AI, which is indeed going to be quite complex, and it will bring volatility to the job markets. That's something I think it's clear.
Two things pop in my mind. One is that I want you to explain to us what is prompt engineering, because you mentioned it a couple of times. And the second thing is that I talk about vulnerable people. Of course, basic people like me, when I hear AI, we all think about ChatGPT, you know, okay, this is the job that they're taking, you know, their ChatGPT is telling us how to write, and this is the job they're taking. But of course, I'm well aware that AI goes well beyond that. So what are the, out of your experience, what are the jobs that have been most impacted? What sector have been most impacted from AI?
Yeah, first to unpack prompt engineering, in other words, is asking questions to chatbots, be it Gemini from Google, ChatGPT, or from OpenAI, or Perplexity. These are probably the main three culprits. So asking better questions, that's what I'm trying to help people with, which is something that most educational systems haven't prepared us for. Because, I mean, regardless of where you've studied for your at least primary education and maybe even secondary, you probably were taught to regurgitate information from the professors, from experts in academics and so on, not necessarily to ask the best questions. And now with, you know, the chatbots we're all using to some degree, the challenge is to ask better questions, because better questions in most cases lead to better results. And to answer your question about which jobs are most at risk, are Funny enough, and I always like to joke with my engineering friends, it's software engineering jobs are at risk. Obviously, because the demand is so high, I'm not afraid of for people's jobs that are already well-versed in the space. There is a concern for people who are just starting now, maybe a computing science degree. Not that they will not find something to do, because it's a very obviously transversal skill to know how to code and you know the statistical mindset you need to build to go through such a degree. It's still helping you. But actually, and there was even a recent study published by Anthropic, software engineering is the niche on which these large language models, not just chatbots, but the LLMs behind them, the large language models, have been most used for. That's followed by writing, so copywriters' jobs, customer service, which also involves a good degree of writing. But software engineering is actually where we've seen the best use cases, but also the most potential for disruption.
Interesting, Pietro. But this doesn't impact my job yet. But
not yet. But I've been—I don't know about you guys, but on, for example, on Instagram, I've been totally bombarded with "What are you doing with your life? Take 30 days today. Your 30-day training. One app per day, 15 minutes." So my question is quite: is it bullshit? these advertisements, or are they? Is there some truth to? Are they really 30 apps that one could, for example, learn to advance their career? Or is it really more 3 or 4?
So are you referring to these apps that are AI powered, or can you elaborate just a bit?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, no. Okay, I got one recently that essentially, if you looked in the logos, it would have, of course, ChatGPT, but as well Canva. I had no idea that as well. And it goes on. It had some for PowerPoint. It really was a broad spectrum of tools in there.
Yeah, I get it now. So indeed, every company, be it large or small, is trying to add the AI wrapper. I'm less sort of suspicious on the Canvas, Microsoft, Googles of the world, since they were always using some form of AI. Because to be honest, I mean, I've been in this tech space for 10 years now. And I was actually at Google in 2016. That's when I started working at Google, when Sundar Pichai was sort of moving the entire company on this sort of AI mission to become AI first. But what we were referring to AI back then was applied AI, using AI to do analytical tasks mostly. What now we have all experienced in the last 2 or 3 years is generative AI, which is indeed what you're referring to with the example of Canva, what I mentioned earlier with ChatGPT. But again, large companies leveraging these technologies, I'm not that skeptical of. I think there is definitely some potential to improve your work, to become more productive. What has happened, and that's a downside of a hype, because there is obviously quite a bit of hype around AI, we have now companies that even their ticker symbol on the stock market is AI. So just look at ticker symbol AI and you'll see those are maybe not the most reliable companies, since they've mushroomed since the ChatGPT revolution. So I would be circumspect, but indeed, AI is a wrapper, and as a wrapper to any other app, it could increase productivity. It helps Meta with their recommendation algorithms or YouTube. So we've been influenced by AI to some degree for some years, even before ChatGPT. Now it's just become common knowledge, I would say.
Okay.
When it comes to, since you work for an NGO, I mean, this means that there is an interest also from organization, institutions, and to upskill indeed, and to better place in the job market workers. When it comes to education, to schools, do you see a change? Do you see the willingness to learn and to start this learning process indeed in the early age?
Yeah, so pros and cons, like with everything. I work in an NGO, Generation.org, which is skilling people and finding them jobs. From our own experience on the skilling part, we actually design curriculum now much faster with the use of AI. So we use AI in developing our curriculum. We also use AI to better make the graduates or learners initially that we prepare with jobs. So we use it quite effectively already in different pilots. We're also piloting a sort of a career coaching AI, so we can actually provide mentoring in a much more scalable way to all our graduates. But then for us, maybe less the con for the educational institutions, and I do have a chance to speak with professors, to even deliver prompt engineering trainings in which in some cases we have professors in the room. And there's a big challenge because the challenge is twofold. First, they seem to not fully grasp how to use it themselves. So they need for sure their own upskilling that not all academic institutions are yet ready to provide. And second, probably what you've heard, if you have friends with children or if you guys have children already, is children of different ages starting to use these tools to do their homework, mm-hmm. which is a huge, huge issue because parents cannot really control it. Teachers cannot either. And the problem is the critical thinking they would have learned by writing the homework themselves is not being done, basically. Their critical thinking muscle, if you delegate your writing to an AI, you're not kindling it in the same way and you're not training it in the same way. So that's a big issue for professors. And there's not many solutions. The only one, and I'll end with this, I promise, the only one I did hear is professors sort of throwing in the towel and saying, we cannot prevent people from using it, or pupils are using it. We want to encourage them to tell us when they use it and to explain how they use it. And that's, I think, something quite useful to do. And in corporations is the same. More and more employers who are open-minded enough, they know they cannot stop their employees to use it outside the working hours. So at least they ask them to be transparent about their use and to maybe even share best practices with colleagues.
Yeah, because now you made me think, I mean, of course we can go and talk about hours about this, but you made me think because I saw on LinkedIn I've been seeing this repeatedly on LinkedIn, people saying, do not write your CV with ChatGPT because we're going to spot it, because they're all going to look the same, do not write the cover letter. Is this, I mean, are we getting really there where people are going to spot it, or since the AI is getting better and better, there will be a point where indeed you're not going to spot the difference anymore? And what I'm asking myself is, do you really want to filter out candidates based on if they take the effort of writing the cover letter themselves or not? Maybe you should just disregard that and go to the other phase. Well, you know, you have to interview the person and see. And the same, what you say about schooling made me think about this.
Yeah, and it's a great topic. And as a career coach, I get this question asked quite often. Candidates ask me, should I write my cover letter with AI? And I always say, the best is if you already have a cover letter that you maybe can, you know, adapt for another industry you want to apply in with the help of AI, always double checking it, you know, the information, and always adding your own experience. You simply saying AI, you know, be it again, ChatGPT, Gemini, write me a cover letter for this job in XY company and copy pasting the output will, even if it may be in some cases, and it does happen, will lead you to the interview because maybe the AI has used all the keywords and you'll pass through the first filter, you'll be exposed in the interview. So it's you taking a short-term solution for a bad outcome eventually. And maybe as an anecdote, there's a very good quote I reminded myself today, easy choices, hard life. Hard choices, easy life. So it's same here. If you take a short-term solution, you'll probably not end up with a good result. Whilst taking in the work to at least paraphrase and with the help of AI adapting your original cover letter to different industries, that's where the real power of AI to augment really shows.
Maybe companies should just stop asking for cover letters.
It's hard to do, but
I know, because you got me thinking, you know, in a lot of companies, since even before this whole AI boom that we're seeing, we're already using tools, right, just as you said, to look for keywords. So it's a bit of a conundrum. It seems symbiosis is the key word here, right? To all the questions that we've asked you so far of how to stay ahead of the curve and how to position yourself. But talking about upcoming things, I know that you're organizing quite the event in May. I'm a member of the Global Shapers, so you, this organization, the World Economic Forum. Tell us a little bit more about, well, what it is. We want to hear in your words what it is and what this event is about.
Sure, happy to. So as you rightfully mentioned, Global Shapers Community, an initiative of the World Economic Forum, founded around 2010-2011. We have a hub indeed in Brussels, and I'm part of the Brussels hub. I'm also what they call the community champion for Benelux and France. So I support shapers, as we're called, in this region. So around 100 shapers in probably 10-12 hubs. Globally, we are 11,000 members, plus 9,000 alumni. I myself, I'm an alumni now. I'm above the sort of age limit.
Yeah. What is a shaper? Who is a shaper?
So let me start. So a global shaper is a young professional between the ages of 18 to 30 who's very actively engaged in their own communities. It doesn't necessarily have to be that, you know, he's an activist. It can be somebody working in the parliament, but somebody who has the desire to give back in some way or the other through volunteering. So we're an NGO at the end of the day. supported by the World Economic Forum, not financially, but with ideas, with reports, with the brand, which helps, of course.
Those so many intelligence reports as well.
Reports and so on. And and we are, like any NGO, we have team buildings or we have gatherings. And the one that your colleague here, Pietro, mentioned is what we call Shape Europe and Eurasia, which is our actually largest regional event. Which, after many years of trying, because we've applied several times to the forum, because you have to apply, like for the Olympics, to host it. Like we applied as a host city three times in a row to host it. Until now, we didn't get it, but this year is our year. And we're finally bringing 250 of these young professionals, as we call them shapers, to Brussels for a weekend full of events, learning, growing, having a bit of fun. Of course, we are in Brussels. They're going to taste the beer. They're going to try the chocolate. And we'll end with some inspiration, hopefully with the call for them to come back to Brussels.
Well, what a perfect bridge to move from AI shapers to Brussels, indeed, since our podcast is called Brussels Unplugged. So where do you go to take beers? How do you leave the city? You mentioned the beers, you mentioned, of course, the chocolate, but how do you leave the city when you're here?
Yeah, I leave the city in sort of a regional way, so to say. I'm lucky enough to live in this sort of a EU bubble, which I love, and I love the sort of spaces we have around. So when the weather gets a bit better, like it was today, I'm probably easy to see me strolling in Leopold Park or going on a Thursday still to Ploegs, but trying to go a bit earlier before the newer comers to Brussels go, when it's still a bit more relaxed. So the beer factory there is a place I go to quite often because it's close to home. And I'm most of the time I'm in this sort of EU space, and I rarely go anymore downtown unless I really have to. So I've been here for 6 years, so I'm more of a Excel person these days.
Excellent. I mean, I like the Carsmaker bar, which is nearby the beer factory. Pietro, any bar where you like to have coffee? Are you an Excel Etterbeck guy? What are you?
Oh boy, I live in sort of like a. Like that little spit of Bruxelles Mille that comes down by Ambury.
So you're Marie-Louise, close to Etterbeek. You're in between Excel, Etterbeek, but still Brussels Thousand.
Absolutely. I get everywhere in the city. I have like 7 bus lines under my house and 2 metro lines. So it's quite nice. It's quite nice. But Excel, I have weird feelings about it, to be honest. Maybe it's because my third day when I was in Brussels, I was on a little trottinette and I got hit by a car.
Many things can happen in Excel.
Absolutely.
It's the biggest, district. So
Do you have an anecdote to share about your life in Brussels, either positive or negative?
Yeah, but for me, in general, Brussels I would define as a city in a way that maybe after all these years of myself coming and going, be it for work or, personal reasons, because I have lived here for the past 6 years, but, during the pandemic, I was back home in my country, in Romania, and I was I'm always traveling with work and with my speaking and coaching engagements. So the best anecdote I have for Brussels is we live in the largest train station in the world. And if you like that, and if you like the coming and going of people, and I personally love it because it means you meet somebody new every other day and you keep getting new ideas and inspiration. If you're down to that, come here. If you want to grow roots, you really have to do an extra effort because you have to be prepared to consistently welcome new people into your life and unfortunately say bye-bye to some.
That's true. I mean, when you talk about the biggest train station, I mean, of course, if the trains are not striking, which is
another
thing that often happens. But this is something recurrent that I've been living in Brussels for 12 years now, but it is true. I heard what you just said, this feeling that people have that they have friendship that lasts 3-4 months or a year, and then people leave and the new ones come, and it's creating bonds that last for a long time. It's very difficult in this city. It's really like revolving door friendships, I would say. So that's exactly what you mentioned.
You have to make an extra effort for sure, but even if some people leave, they in some cases come back, or that friendship is strong enough developed whilst in Brussels.
Absolutely.
That remains.
Yes, and then you have a good friend to go visit,
exactly.
Maybe somewhere sunny on the beach.
And eventually all roads lead to Brussels, I have a feeling. Like, used to be Rome, but now Brussels, like, I have so many friends who, for I don't know what reason, they're coming here, and it's usually not the usual visiting given the weather. It's usually a conference, it's usually a concert, a festival. Mm-hmm. So plenty of reasons to come to not just Brussels, but Belgium in general.
Also, there all roads lead to Brussels unless there are construction works, yes, which is also something that happens really often.
Matteo, you need to learn to take a bike or a trottinette, my man.
I might get hit like you did. So
you've clearly been here for 12 years. There's yeah, a caveat to everything.
There is a caveat, indeed. Pietro, let's wrap up with our guest. We always ask our Brussels Unplugged recommendations. So, David, did you read any book that you would like to recommend? Did you watch any TV series that you would like to recommend, please?
Restaurants, yes, as well.
Yes. So TV series, I'll start with that because it's fresh in my mind since today is a new episode. I'm a big fan of Severance, which you can watch, I think, on Apple TV or stream it online. You didn't hear me say that.
Just heard Apple TV.
Yeah. We can just bleep it.
Season 2 has already been launched, and today I think they are launching the 6th or 7th episode, which I'm looking forward to. So Severance, a great, great series.
What is it about?
It's actually, interestingly enough, about what I care about, work. And it's sort of about people who are working in a very secretive organization, which with their own accord implants a chip in their brain to separate their working life from their daily life, meaning that they, when they go to work, they don't know who they are in their real life.
Oh, wow.
It's talking about work-life balance with the chip. hopefully this is not Black Mirror. Hopefully this will not happen because the series is not necessarily with a happy ending, to spoil it a bit. But it does find an interesting solution to work-life balance, planting a chip and forgetting during the work what you are at home and vice versa.
It seems a bit like the teenager approach, where I was drunk, so it doesn't matter.
Kind of. Or if you watch Man in Black with that little gimmick they have, yeah, like, forget everything. But anyhow, so Severance is a series, but I really have a book I want to recommend for, and actually it's great for people living in Brussels. It's called My Words of Choice, mm-hmm, and it's written by a Bruxelles, Peter Russell, a fellow expat who's made Brussels his home for 15 years. Funny enough, I met him in an event I was speaking at. He approached me afterwards. We had a coffee. I found out he's a writer, and I read his book, and I loved it. And he's telling his journey from, you know, moving from originally Scotland, where he was born, to Poland, Dubai, and then to Brussels, where he found himself a home. And as he says, he just got his master's in Europeanness in Brussels after 10 plus years here.
Amazing, your master of Europeanness, Pietro.
Fantastic, fantastic. Matteo, I actually picked up your suggestion and I started watching The Diplomat.
All right.
I'm still on the first few episodes, so no spoilers. I'm one of those people that really hate spoilers.
Try Borgen, though. If you like The Diplomat, yes. Borgen is European version.
Okay.
Yeah, Borgen is one of still of the old school TV series. It's supposedly inspired by the Margaret Vestager career, career. Yeah, so they say. I mean, it's a Danish TV series. So, of course, watch it with subtitles. Borgen is another one I would strongly recommend. How do you find The Diplomat then?
Oh, I'm liking it a lot. I'm liking it a lot so far. It has, I'm certain that point, you know, that they're setting the scene, the story, the characters and all that. So, but you can already see the plot thickening, the different plots rather, thickening and intertwining. So it's very fantastic. And reading wise, just very simple. I'm on my 7th or 8th book of the Vice Questore Schiavone series, L'amore, l'amore.
Some Italian reading.
It's just very easy peasy, noir, but reinvention of the uomo duro, the you know, the hard cop, strongman. Yeah, absolutely. So I found that interesting. Eating wise. I need to get out more. I was in Italy for a week, and before that I had the super long flu for like 3 weeks. So
no eating outside, no restaurant.
I know, very little. In Italy I did. I was fine. You know, went to Abruzzo, so many arrosticini and everything. But Matteo, how do you unplug?
I unplug by watching a TV series, which is 100 Years of Solitude from the famous book of Gabriel Garcia Marquez. I was a bit disappointed by it, maybe because I read the book some years ago, and it's still one of my favorite books. And the TV series, I think, that lacks some... In the adaptation of the book, it lacks some vibe that the Gabriel Garcia Marquez gave me. I still think that some books cannot really be translated in movies, let alone TV series, you know, this idea of splitting things in episodes. So, but I still watch it till the end. It's 9 episodes, very long episodes, 1 hour and 10 minutes each.
Oh, nice.
So, and you know, I don't know if you read the book, but it tells the story about this city developing, this Macondo, which is, and the family, the Buendia family, that sort of goes down generation. It's a bit cyclical. So, per se the book is really, really cyclical, and watching a TV series where not much is happening other than family drama, it also makes it a bit less entertaining. So that's it. Food recommendation, one very little. Since you cannot go out,
yes.
You didn't go out because
I need to catch up.
You were. But I will give you an in-house food recommendation, which is, if we are still going to have some cold and winter weeks ahead, raclette is perfect.
Ah,
raclette,
yes,
with friends is perfect. And I recommend to buy the cheese at La Fruitière, which is a cheese place downtown, near, not far away from Grand Place, and they have amazing raclette cheese.
La Fruitière, if you plan to
do raclette with your friends, I strongly recommend you to buy it there.
Fantastic. I think that's great. A wrap.
David, thanks a lot again.
Thank you.
Well, we always ask our guests where people can find you on LinkedIn. David Timmis.
David Timmis on LinkedIn. I'm quite active there. You guys have found out. So reach out on LinkedIn if you have any questions, comments, or if you want to grab a cup of coffee.
Amazing.
Speaking about reaching out, we wanted to thank you for reaching out to us, and because we really want to put our listeners at the center and help us tell the story of Brussels.
Great, David, thanks a lot again. Pietro, we are gonna wrap it up, and we're gonna talking to each other and viewing each other in a month on the 25th of March.
Yes,
and have a good day.
Absolutely. Thank you, David.
Bye.
Thank you.
Ciao.